I'm Christine Dean, and this is live from Studio A. And joining us today, we are very happy to welcome back to our studios Adam Levy, who you might know as one of the members of the Honey Dogs, leader of the Honey Dogs, basically. But you've also got a solo. Well, you have many projects, Adam, right?
Yes.
But right now, your main thing is a solo album that you just put out called Knob and Way.
Right.
That just came out in October.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be performing tonight at the Red Herring Lounge in Duluth, along with the Social Animals. And I believe you're opening the show, right?
That's right.
And we'll get you the details on that. Do you know what time it starts?
I think I'm on at 9:30.
All right. So 9:30, showtime at the Red Herring Lounge in Duluth tonight. And Adam, you actually were here back in 2012, and you had recently had just the unimaginable happen, which was your son Daniel passed away. He committed suicide. And in fact, it was ended up being the day before you went to Knob and Way, which is where you ended up scattering his ashes, right?
Right.
And since then, you've been talking a lot about mental health issues, and then you came out with this album, which really is for Daniel, about Daniel, and mm-hmm. inspired by that situation. So why don't you share a tune with us, and then we'll okay. come back and we'll talk a little bit more.
All right. First song I'm going to play is called Potter's Field. And it's a song that sort of talks a little bit about Daniel's art and some of his struggle. There's a cloud of blackbirds, and they're looking for the seeds of autumn on the ground. Teeth of time, vandal moths, devour memories in paper, steel, wood, iron, and cloth. It'll pull you like a magnet, it'll soothe your nerves, quiet pain. Knock you down, take you out to the potter's field in the rain. There's a photo, black and white, of that troubled boy looking through us, through all time.
That's Adam Levy, live from Studio A, and a tune from his latest album, Knob and Way, called Potter's Field. And you mentioned Daniel's art, which adorns the album. He was a very talented artist.
Yeah, he was a really remarkable artist, and you know, I'm always going to be the proud parent. Yeah, he was really talented and quite expressive in the art, and it's hard work to look at for a lot of people. It's really grotesque and intense and often violent and brutal in the imagery, but I see a lot of human features in the work that he did, a lot of sort of empathy with the characters. Sometimes it's a little humorous. Sometimes it's amazingly perceptive. But yeah, I mean, the work is really, it's probably the most powerful thing that we have in the wake of his death. And we've got a lot of his art.
And I think I read that kind of going through his art is part of what inspired the songs. Because you didn't write for a long time after his death.
Yeah, I really stopped writing anything that I would say was serious and reflective, which is probably the majority of the music that I've made in my adult life is about lots of serious topics. And I felt like I needed to put that aside. I did write some Bunny Clogs music, which is my kids' group with my daughters. And so I did some fun stuff. And that was kind of nice to take my mind off it. I played a lot, and I have a lot of different bands, but I really was not able to write at all. I did write, though, in the form of blogging, and I spoke publicly a lot, and I was responding to a great deal of notes and inquiries from people who are also dealing with mental health issues with family members, spouses, and kids. So I just found myself reflecting on a lot of this stuff and reflecting on Daniel's life. And sort of naturally what happened was, you know, there are phrases and things I would say that I thought could serve as, you know, raw material for songs, in some cases lyric, in some cases sort of ideas for songs. So about a year after Daniel's death, I started to write a little bit. And then the songs were just coming. They came kind of rapidly.
And it's an interesting variety because some of them are very literal about things that you went through, you and your family went through at the time. And then others are, you know, not so much. They're more, I think, like some of your other work with Honey Dogs and whatever. Mm-hmm. So I found that interesting that it's kind of a variety.
Yeah, I would say, generally speaking, it probably is more literal than I've been in a long time in my songwriting. Because of the subject matter. But I think there's sometimes where it's not easy to put into real simple words feelings that you're having, or sometimes creating evocative images about other things can touch on subjects that may be difficult to speak about really explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the album came out in October, and you've been also... as well as going out and playing songs from the album, you've also been invited to speak at various places about mental health issues. And it seems like this has been kind of a thing that has helped you process your grief, is to do this work. And you've also talked not just about Daniel's struggles, but that, you know, you have also struggled with depression at different times. So tell me about... Daniel really struggled before, you know, this wasn't a sudden thing, you know,
right,
at all. And in fact, we had talked about that just a little bit because mm-hmm. during the last Honey Dogs records, you'd been going through a lot of things with him. And so this has been part of your life for a long time and an issue in your life for a long time. But part of why you wanted to speak out was because you felt like people don't talk about these things enough. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say an immense part of why I talk about it is simply to heal myself. And I find, I think with any kind of trauma, people tell their story as a way of kind of getting better. And so telling the story about Daniel's life and his struggle has helped me put together a story about what happened, you know, because it's really inexplicable in a lot of ways. And doing that for myself, I think inadvertently had the effect of a lot of other people saying, wow, this is like so similar to what I've experienced, or I'm really worried about my kid. And wow, you're really brave to talk about this. And it's like, no, I'm not brave. Bravery is doing something you don't want to do. This just feels really therapeutic, and it feels connective. It feels like there's a sort of sense of community in this conversation that we've really lacked for many years. I can remember suffering from mental illness in college and not being able to talk to anybody and being depressed. And it was just sort of something that you lived with, you know, and you really didn't have anyone to talk to. And now all of a sudden, I think there is this groundswell. And so, you know, this moment of Daniel's death and my grief, I think, is really coinciding with a larger social desire to have a greater conversation and start to talk about reducing the stigmas around mental illness.
And there must be some comfort in being able to provide that for other people.
Yeah. I mean, this is certainly not a club I ever would have wanted to join, and it's not a position I would have seen myself in, even immediately in the wake of his death. I wouldn't have foreseen myself as being somebody who was going to be really vocal about it, but, you know, here I am.
And so tell me about some of the things that you've been involved with surrounding mental health issues. You've done you did something for the National Association of Mental Illness, something like that.
Well, I spoke at Yale in October. The day the record came out, I was actually asked to speak at the Yale School of Medicine, Department of Psychiatry. And so I gave an hour presentation, which involved talking about Daniel's art and talking about the linkages between his creativity and his mental illness. I performed songs, and it was really pretty exciting to be able to not only talk to folks and have residents and professors ask me questions about Daniel's life and my experiences with grief and creativity, but I was given an hour and a half to have lunch with some of these amazing folks who are doing research in all sorts of areas around mental illness, and was given an opportunity to ask a lot of questions. And that was really exciting. I was the keynote speaker at a NAMI event, the National Association for Mental Illness. I can't remember
something
something like that. And I spoke at a large Twin Cities Jewish interfaith mental health conference. And there's just a lot of other places I'm being asked to talk around the country. So it's become a part of my life and another thing that I'm doing in addition to performing music.
I do want to talk about what you mentioned, the link between creativity and mental illness. There was also always been this kind of myth that you have to kind of be on the edge to be a good artist or something like that, and that, you know, suffering is a good thing for your art. Do you think that that's still something that people believe and that is kind of needs to be counteracted?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know if we'll ever completely get rid of that iconic notion of an artist having to suffer greatly to create great art. I certainly don't believe you have to suffer to create great art. I think it's a part of some great art. Certainly Daniel's suffering contributed to this amazing world and landscape that he created. I mean, it was a visual language for something that he could not put into words. But I also know this about Daniel, and that it was that Daniel did not like the lionizing of great artists who suffered in order to be great artists. So, you know, all of the Kurt Cobain, Jim Morrison, Van Gogh, and so on and so forth. Like, he just thought that was really, fantasy. And the pain that he experienced was something that he wouldn't have wished upon his worst enemy. It was a real darkness that I think he would have traded almost anything to get rid of. So the notion that somehow he had to be a sufferer in order to do that, I think, is just not true. And I think that's part of what I want to talk to people about, that we can make great art. And there's certainly a lot of people in the recovery community who went through periods where they thought they needed to be using hard drugs or alcohol or whatever to be creative, and they discover after the fact that actually they sound a lot better and write better when they're not. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we do kind of need to reconfigure some of that. I will say this, though, that I think we need to understand the balance of the human experience as artists. And some of that is going to be dark and some of it is happy, and trying to find some channel in there that works between it. I feel like I make music that's about very serious subject matter, and can be very painful lyrically, but I also feel like I want to house it in something that is healing and soothing and hopeful to people. And sometimes that's melody and musical environment or rhythm. But I'm not a big believer in, for myself, creating something that's absolutely, you know, so painful and dark.
Mm-hmm. And hope is a theme that's come up in, as I've been researching this interview, and you have a quote on the album, "Hope is the wounded beast that never should be put out of its misery." Where did that come from?
You know, I think it's a paraphrase of something famous that I just can't recall off the top of my head. It's probably a little bit of a lift, but it just resonated with me so much that hope is that thing that just, it's always, there's always a sort of naive sense that you have to keep alive, because if once we lose that, I think we really do lose our humanity and our quest for life. And Daniel really did lose that tether to the world that most of us have. Even when the chips are really down, we seem to figure out, like, if we can just remain somewhat hopeful, things will work themselves out. Daniel didn't have that any longer.
And he was a person, you know, who was loved. He was close to you. He was close to his mother. And, you know, it's so hard to explain these things because, you know, it's so different for every person. I'm not sure where I was going with that. That idea that, you know, you never know who it's going to strike. You know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, Daniel had, in many ways, a really idyllic childhood and was loved and was a very magnetic kid. And physically, he was a great skateboarder, and he was a great artist. And lots of kids just wanted to be around him and hang out with him. But there was this, this illness that he suffered from that nothing seemed to be able to take that away. And so, you know, in talking to people, I really try to talk about that this can happen to anybody. And part of it was he kind of received some heavy genetic material from his mom and me. Both of us suffer from mental illness in our families.
Well, let's hear another song, and we'll talk a little bit more. And I want to talk about the new Honey Dogs project as well. That's coming up.
So you mentioned that the day that we performed here in 2012 was actually the day before we took my son's ashes to Naubenway. And I forgot about that. That's right. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the title track from the record right now. This is the song about that day that we drove to Naubenway, his sisters and his stepmom and me from Minneapolis, and then his biological mother from New York. And we met in this little strip of beach in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, on Lake Michigan, and it was the last place that his mom had seen him smiling. So it was a real significant place for us to choose to do this, and it was a wonderful day. It was a beautiful day, a very solemn day, where we spent probably 2.5 hours scattering his ashes in the lake and just sitting by ourselves and thinking about Daniel. So yeah, this is Naubenway. Driving 500 miles to meet your mother and you in a bag on the shores of Naubenway. Your sisters are broken, your two mothers frozen. Only 6 months have passed since you've chosen to end the blows of an unbearable world. Now you'll be a pearl in Naubenway. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, bid you adieu only if we must. Backwards baptism in Lake Michigan, I cradle my baby on his deathbed. Sleep, my beautiful son, in the shallows of Naubenway. Sister's hand, all that was left when they burned your mortal coil at 1,000 degrees. Fahrenheit. The powder was your bones and all, and the spirits, the fiery furnace couldn't raise. We would place the knob and wait. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, a bit you at you. Baptism in Lake Michigan, I cradled my baby on his deathbed. Sleep, my beautiful son, in the shadows of Dolphin Way. Well, on the next day, we shed the tears of jade. Niagara's cascade, memories fade on the road from Norway. We went through your things and I slept in your bed. I wore your clothes, your specters shone from the grave. Norman Wayne. Dust to dust, bid you adieu, only if we must. Backwards baptism in Lake Michigan, I cradle my baby on his deathbed.
Adam Levy live from Studio A, and that's the song that winds up his Knob and Way album, song by the same name. And you did kind of bookend the album with solo tunes, just you and yeah. your guitar, which I think it works really well. And
thank you. Yeah, you know, I intended to write most of the music with the idea of just using my voice and my guitar, or at least to do most of the heavy lifting that way. But I thought it sort of made for more interesting listening and kind of more of a little journey to take people into places with a little more instrumentation and kind of in and out of that real starkness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have a really nice band in there, like musicians on the album and just some great arrangements and things. So I think it's a very nice album aside from, you know, because of and aside from the subject matter, it's just a really beautiful album.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about Clemens in Plainview. Tell me about that song.
Yeah. So that song is a little bit of a pause in the record. It's actually about Slim Dunlop, who was, for those who are not familiar, Slim Dunlop was the guitar player in The Replacements. And Slim was just a hugely influential musician in the Twin Cities. Somebody asked me to write a song for him for a benefit because Slim suffered a stroke a couple of years ago and has had a lot of trouble paying for really exorbitant medical bills. So a lot of people have joined in. And in fact, it's probably the cause of The Replacements getting back together to raise money for Slim when they did their show. Series of shows. But I wrote the song sort of just cataloging my own experiences and in being involved with him. He's a really influential musician. He could cut you to the quick with a little phrase. Inadvertently, he would be trying to compliment you and would kind of sideways knock you down. But he was just such an affable character and very funny and was full of little quotes. And I kind of saw him as a Mark Twain-like figure, and he had this really thick Southern accent, even though he was from Plainview, Minnesota. So I just thought that would be kind of an interesting way to describe him as a Clemens from Plainview.
Okay.
But there's a lot of name checking of artists and locations in the city and things that I had done with them, like, you know, playing football on a St. Louis roadside at, like, you know, 1:32 in the morning.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm glad I asked you about that one because, yeah, the name checking and then, like, there's something going on here that I'm not getting. So thank you for sharing that. Oh, well, so what's next for you with this album?
Well, I'm doing some traveling and a lot more speaking and, you know, traveling around the country. It's nice to be able to just go by yourself sometimes without having to worry about a bunch of equipment and a bunch of band members and hotels. And the money is great, but it's real lonely. That's the other thing is, so, you know, trying to find some balance in playing with the band and playing by myself. I've also got a Honey Dogs record that is cooking right now and just about probably 95% done. And we just started a Pledge Music campaign that people can find online with Pledge Music. And I'm really excited about that record. It's a very different record than Knob and Way, but it was recorded relatively quickly. It's a very political record.
Oh, okay. How so?
Kind of the climate that we live in right now is very, very combat filled in terms of conversations about our morals and the way we see the world going. So a lot of this record puts words to that.
So have you guys done a campaign like that before? Is this your first try?
This is the first time. I was always kind of reluctant to do something like this, but basically it's just asking people to order their record in advance and that sort of helps pay for all of the costs on everything. It's a real logical, simple thing. And we've had, you know, basically it's been going for 24 hours now and we're doing pretty well.
And where can people find that if they're interested?
Well, you can find the Pledge Music link. I can't remember the URL off the top of my head, but I know it's on our honeydogs.com website. If you look for the honeydogs.com, you should be able to find the link to that right as you open up that page.
Okay. Now you put your guitar down. Could we get you to do one more, or is that all you had prepared? And that's
sure
okay.
Sure, we could do one.
All right.
More.
If you want to do one more, we would love to have you. And again, this is Adam Levy, and he is performing tonight with the Social Animals at the Red Herring Lounge in Duluth. And show now, according to Facebook, it starts at 10. So 9:30, 10.
Yeah, probably. It's probably 10.
But get there early, just in case, if you're going to the show.
Let's see if I can remember this one here. I'm going to do one called I Wish You Well, and this is the song. I think a lot of the songs on the record deal with different facets of the experience, grief and so forth. And this is really, people ask me, well, were you ever angry with Daniel about leaving? And I've never really felt any anger because his pain was so visceral. We understood his pain so much. And so this is just the song that sort of sends him off into the cosmos in the hopes that wherever he is, he's not feeling that pain any longer. Vistas wide open. I wish you well. Truth, love, and beauty. Dauntless, intrepid. Endlessly hoping. But not always. Once you're always dripping with venom. You leave unsentimental eyes. Resolute and cold. But I still feel the twinge of yearning for you. I wish you well, happiness, health, and vistas wide open. I wish you well, truth, love, and beauty, dauntless and trepid, endlessly hoping. I see you found love, much better than we had. I see your face filled with joy, heart rooted in the soil. All seems right with the world. But I still feel the twinge of yearning for you. And I wish you well.
vistas wide open. I wish you well. Truth, love, and beauty, dauntless and intrepid. I remember the night in Athens. Cries in the plaza. This is like lava. Your words flow like plasma. Knives shoot through my mind and strangle my thoughts. But I wish you well. Happiness, health, and vistas wide open. I wish you well. Truth, love, and beauty, dauntless and trembling, endlessly, endlessly hoping. Oh, endlessly, endlessly hoping. Endlessly hoping.
Adam Levy, live from Studio A, and another one from his latest album, a solo one called Knob and Way. Thank you so much, Adam. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Nice to be back, Christine. Thanks for having me.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Aaron Welch and Cheyenne Favorina. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.